You're listening to On the Couch with Carly. Carly's couch is a safe space to talk. I'm a psychologist, but I'm not your pipe-smoking, tweed-wearing stereotype.
Hello, and welcome back to On the Couch with Carly. Today, I'm super excited to have Punyalala Ndlovu on the couch. Punyalala, otherwise known as Cone to his nearest and dearest, is actually a good friend of mine, disclaimer, and that I'm so stoked to have you here. But we are going to be talking to you because I am super excited to have a conversation with you about fatherhood, something that you have been doing for the last 7 and a bit years. Is that correct?
Yeah, 7 years.
On top of your other artistic expressions in the realm of producer, artist, filmmaker. And I know you have actually made beautiful films on the topic of fatherhood itself. And so I really wanted to have you over to have a discussion about fatherhood. I've been doing like a little mini series on fatherhood. I've spent so much time talking to mothers and talking about motherhood. And obviously that's my experience. So it's so refreshing to have dads on the show and to hear from dads about the role of a father in the modern world and some of the challenges that you face and how art can sort of bring it all together and make meaning of it and share it with the world. So yeah, I'm super excited to hear your insights. So thanks for being here, Cone.
Oh, it's exciting. Thanks for inviting me on. It's really great. It's really good to see you. It's been like eons. So yeah, gosh.
I know. And I feel like a different person, everybody. I've been talking to my clients every week, every day this week about the fact that my hair is straight. And I was thinking at first, like, oh, I should hide my hair. Like, I don't want to have this discussion. I don't want to be about me. But it's been so interesting, actually, because the conversations that come out of the straight hair are really interesting. Like yesterday, I had a discussion with a client who I didn't even know. She's brand new, but she told me that her husband's black and she's got mixed race children. And it's such a contentious issue in their home because one child has curlier hair than the other and their mother has straight hair. And they go to a private school in Cape Town where everybody has straight hair. And it was just an interesting discussion about hair and the meaning of hair and how we treat it differently depending on what hair they have, really.
Oh, man. Yeah, those with hair. Just for the record, you know, those of us who still fighting the fight. Just shout out to a lot of dads.
Challenged.
But, you know, it's great. Yeah, the politics of that. I mean, that's a whole other discussion entirely. But completely understand. Think about that a lot because obviously, you know, my son, should I say our son, he's got incredibly big hair, and he's like one of two kids with that kind of hair in the entire school. So that's really fascinating to watch and sort of seeing the dynamics of there's like kids who have just never experienced it in their entire life. And then there's kids who are just super fascinated by it. And it's fascinating watching the dynamics of all of that come together sort of thing. So yeah, anyway, topic for another day, Carly. It'll be,
Maybe. But yeah, so Cohen, just tell us a little bit about you, your journey from like where were you born and where are you now and how did you get between those two places in a really brief sentence or two?
I was born in Zimbabwe in the 80s. So I was born in what I like to call the colonial hangover. So I was born in May 23rd, 1987, if anyone's watching for detail. I reference that because the colonialism ended in Zimbabwe in 1980. So with our generation of kids growing up, we were sort of caught between, I guess, that Salman Rushdie, like Midnight's Children. We were caught between the end of segregation in Zim and the end of apartheid in South Africa, sort of in between. So my first holiday when I was 6 months old was in Cape Town, and that became a city I loved. But I have a lot of family from South Africa, and so Southern Africa is a very big part of my identity. But I grew up in Zim and then moved to London when I was a teenager and sort of finished school or went to art school and sort of had a second life. Got married really young to my, well, no longer married, but wonderful co-parent and life companion, Kat, who we're all longtime mates, and we got married and moved to Cape Town together. We lived there for 3 years and then came back to London. And so I think that second time in Cape Town, which is the time period we met and became really good friends, it was almost like a kind of like a half time for me, so to speak, in life to sort of see, because I was born in Southern Africa, but I wasn't really made in it, so to speak. Like I'd never really worked in that culture and context. And so I sort of came back and realized a few projects and things, but ultimately came back to living in Europe. And I say my cat, she's from South Germany as well. So Europe is always this important thing, but we've got this real kind of polarity in our lives that has sort of connected us. And of course, now we've got our beautiful boy who's just turned 7. And yeah, very much our lives are sort of connected by that trifecta, if you will. And so, yeah, I've always worked in creative sector. I'm one of those fortunate kids who I got to go to art school. I'm like first in my family to go to art school. But I also sort of have come to mature and realize that I used to say younger version of myself was like, oh, there's no creativity in my family because of segregation and history and all of this. But when I grew up, I sort of realized it's like there was creative strains in my family. My grandfather was a tailor. One of my grandmothers was a singer. You know, I had an uncle who was a musician. He used to tour with like Janet Jackson and stuff in America. And my dad actually went to the first school in Rhodesia that had the first kind of black art school for kids in Rhodesia. So there's a lot of like crossovers. And so in a way, I've sort of come to realize that I didn't really have a choice, that it was always going to be end up that way for me. And so, yeah, I sort of came into it, came sort of from the angle of I started producing a lot of projects in the time where kind of brands were throwing a lot of money at creativity. And when I wasn't producing events, I was making films. When I wasn't making films, I was writing essays. When I wasn't writing essays, I was making art shows. And that's kind of been the revolution of my life, whether for paid patrons or in my personal practice. So, yeah. So right now, I'm still in London, still very much in East London, and I've kind of spent a great period of my life here and still loving it. Yeah. So, yeah, I kind of wake up
But
and.
as you guys can hear, he's a bit of a creative powerhouse. And
Yeah, so to speak.
I think because it's maybe, I mean, not all artists go to art school, but I think one thing to recognize about you is that it's also an intellectual pursuit. So it's a practical application, but you are also very embedded in the sort of meaning making of art and of its kind of the way I see it, also around history and how art and history sort of can inspire each other in a way.
Totally, totally. And I think a lot, I remember a few years ago, I was listening to the late, great Toni Morrison. She had this really interesting, I think it was like a talk between her and, what's her name? I'll remember. She was having a conversation, but they were talking about how a lot of the time in society, we kind of really put an emphasis on literacy, but no one ever spoke about visual literacy. And visual literacy was this thing that was just kind of sidelined and kind of derided. You know, it's always this first thing. Whenever there's a crunch in any government, whatever, the first thing they cut is like arts funding or creative funding. You know, it's always seen as this like unnecessary over the top thing. But when you really, really think about it, there's a great short story that Ray Bradbury wrote, an amazing science fiction story about a world where they took away all the books and all sort of pictures and meaning. And so I can't imagine, for me, it's just like a really normal pursuit of like trying to understand life. And I'm not entirely sure where society got to where we separated it and it became this thing of like, oh, there's people X who study it as like this, you know, intellectual pursuit versus, you know, us plebs at the bottom, where it's like, I'm a firm believer it should be for everyone. And I think if more people understood that, I think they'd have an incredibly rich experience of the world, because it's important. It's all consuming everything we do.
Yeah, and for me as a psychologist, there's like a shift in the way people are thinking right now, where they're really seeing creativity as not just like about artistic expression, but that life is a creative process as well. And that when we are in our creative process, when we can look at life in a create from a creative place, it's actually very good for our mental health. So it's such a fundamental part of being human, actually. And if
Completely.
we can come from that place when we even just to understand sadness and sorrow and suffering, we do better. We do better from that place.
Yeah, absolutely. And even to your point of like, yeah, understanding that, I've been slowly reading this incredible book called the Google the who's the guy who came up? Gutenberg, that's it. The Gutenberg parentheses. And it's an incredible history of like the birth of the printing press and like and writing and like where this all came from. But the journo who writes it, he makes this really, I know it sounds really stupid when I say it, but makes this valid point that the moment people could write and publish a book. For the first time in history, we had another version of privacy that was entirely for ourselves. And we all know this, you know, from a psychologist's perspective, it's like the moment we take time to sit by ourselves, that's when all the thoughts can percolate. But before that, no one had that. We had to be in concert with other humans to sit and listen to stories and be told what that was. We know that's like rooted in the church and even the singular language of having one Latin Bible, et cetera, et cetera. So the moment that got democratized, there's this burst of creativity from everyone. It enabled people to be like, cool, actually, I think this or I think that. We just didn't really have that prior. Or people had it internally, but there was no kind of forum or platform for them to express it safely. You know what I mean? So, and that's kind of interesting. You know what I mean? And I think that's where people, the more you can find with that, the more you can feel enabled to express it. I always have this thing that, like, I think a lot of people, we're all innately creative and artistic. A lot of us just never find the form to express it. You know what I mean? And that's the great shame, the real great shame.
Exactly. And I think this preamble like really sets the stage well for what I really want us to do with this conversation, which is to think of the idea of fatherhood, the phenomenon of the transition from being a man without a child to a man who is a father and a partner to a mother. And there's this amazing book that was written, it was published last year called Matrescence. I don't know if you've come
I heard of it, haven't read it yet, but a lot of friends have told me about it.
Love it. I think you really should read it. Also, UK author, and she's really interesting because she's got an ecological journalistic background. So a lot of what she intersperses in the book are these little, like, just little epigraphs. Is that what it's called? Epigraphs? Like the chapter where she just references some other plant species, and her main sort of thesis is around the idea of metamorphosis, that like motherhood is a process of metamorphosis, and obviously there's metamorphoses that occur in the natural environment. And so she like references all these other species that go through metamorphoses and what happens to them. And then however she picks up on things that happens in the natural environment, and then you kind of it's a parallel drawn with what's happening as a mother, a modern mother in this world, becoming a mother. Anyway, it's a fantastic book, I've been doing these antenatal classes in Cape Town where I teach concepts from this book, but also my own concepts of like what we should be prepared for when we go into parenthood. And your dad said to me, "Is there a matrescence for men? You know, and what is that?" So I guess in a way, that's partly this question that I have for you is like, as a man who's experienced the transition into fatherhood, what did you think fatherhood was going to be like, and how did it differ?
Bringing a baby home isn't just about nappies and night feeds. It changes everything: your identity, your relationships, even your career. If you're expecting a baby or recently became a parent, my online course, Oh Baby, WTF, is for you. It's not your typical antenatal class. It goes deeper into the real, often messy experience of becoming a parent. You'll explore the four big spheres that shift when a baby arrives: who you are, your partnership, your community, and your work life. And you'll walk away with a practical mental health toolkit to help you through those "what just happened" moments. All online, self-paced, honest, real, and actually helpful. Ready to feel more prepared for everything that comes with a new baby? Head to onthecouchwithcarly.com to find out more and sign up for Oh Baby WTF today in your
Oh, yeah. Wow. How much time we got, Carly? Yeah, that's a very, very incredibly good point. I'll just start like this. I guess I'd always imagined that. I think when I was sort of like, even when I was younger before marriage, and I'd always imagined that I would be like, I wanted to be a parent in some way, shape, or form. I think subconsciously, the reasoning behind it, which is where I probably differ with a lot of other. I don't want to speak for all dads, but I think the main point that I'm finding out is that a lot of dads differ on the reason of why to become dad. I think there's a lot of men who do it because it's the done thing. And society has kind of created an environment where, so long as they just get a job, they don't really have to change much. If we're being really honest, they kind of can cohabited a partner, and cool, that's a whole separate discussion on its own. But I was always maybe subconsciously of the belief that I wanted to be a parent as an attempt to put good back into the world. So in my when I sort of think, I once had a 3 hour conversation with my dad about his dad and the difference between our fatherly generations is entirely naturally would be entirely different. But you know, my dad only ever saw his dad probably about three times in his life before the age of five. And so dad would say to me that, you know, he doesn't really have a concept in his head to be in a house or in a domestic domicile where you can say that person is mum, that person is dad, you know, because his parents weren't really around for want of a bit of reason. And I'm a Ndebele man from southern Zimbabwe. I ended up being a full-time dad for about probably a year and a half, which is like I must have broken some records or something. It's like completely unheard of. Where I'm from, it's the least masculine thing you could possibly do. And so I think to your point in question, like I felt an incredible softening. Like I say, I'm from where I'm from. I grew up in quite a conservative society. I'm an ex-boarding school boy. You know, I had to, don't get me wrong, I never knew like trouble or anything like that or hunger or coldness, but it wasn't a particularly like, there weren't tender men around me. And when my son was born, it felt like there was a lot of like walls that were sort of broken down inside me. And that's not even of like expectations or whatever. It just really softened me. Like I was crying more. I was like, I felt like a lot of my, I like to think I was quite an empathetic person, but my empathy was went through the roof, you know, with that. And I'd even, when I'd speak with Killian's mom, she would say to me, she can notice, she's like, I can tell that when you father him in the way you'd have liked to have been fathered as a kid. You can kind of see the, so maybe it's like that's me doing some kind of like a generational repair, if you know, want a better phrase. So yeah, and I think that's what it sort of became more than I had imagined. There's also a lot of practical things. I think there's a lot of probably unhappy men who continue in careers because they think that, quote unquote, they need to provide for their family. But I'm also of the belief of like, if you're unhappy, your child will sense it and see it. That's kind of no one really wins, right? So the kind of greatest honor you can do is do your best to be happy for your child. If you can help it and change and shift it. And at least in my case, there's a lot of things that Killian really hastened the pace for me to make necessary changes. Like I made a lot of career pivots. I grew up in many ways. And that was great. It was really, really a wonderful time. And he engendered a lot of male conversations in my world. It was really, I remember a sort of friend saying to me once, if I felt emasculated by staying at home and changing nappies all day in that period of being in full-time dad. And I said to him, I felt the most empowered and masculine I've ever felt. Because what in my head at least, like taking care of such a delicate life in that period and knowing you only have this finite window to do it in, to me is like the most sort of human and connected thing, which is like healthy masculinity to me at least, you know. And to, there's a lot of men and a lot of conversations I've had where it's like they can't see beyond provider, end of fiscal sense. Do you know what I mean? So yeah, that's sort of really roughly like how I felt. It's like I called it like my great. It's almost like a deconstruction in a way. Like I learn a lot more from my son than he can teach me, and I unlearn a lot of stuff every day of like, oh wow, didn't think of it that way. That's maybe not that important. Or so yeah, I don't know if
Yeah,
that
it's amazing, and it's picking up on some themes that I actually already touched on with another father that I've done an episode with. And one of the themes that I picked up on, which is in your story as well, which is the idea of humility,
made sense.
which is such an interesting thing to like, what is it that why I mean, I think the sort of traditional masculine sort of the way it's positioned is that it's about superiority, dominance, powerful as in bigger and stronger and can exert power over. But
Yeah, totally.
you're suggesting that there's a masculinity that is almost like humble in its protectiveness, in its, I don't know, it's like a surrendering to the care and the idea of nurturing, really. I think maybe nurturance
Okay.
wasn't part of the original definition of masculinity. And I mean, what a sad thing to not be included in
Oh,
the.
completely. And yeah, I do think about, when you talk about the humility thing, it's, I'd say, like, with fathers, it's humility versus humiliation. And like, like, just candidly, it's like, we all know this, like, you're a parent, I'm a parent. Like, when there's a period in life with kids where for like years they just don't understand the world, right? So they kind of hold court, and you have to sort of bow down to that. There's not much you can do. And the other thing is, like, particularly in that space, when they're like real, like babies still, like in nappies and all that, they can't talk. They physically can't talk. So if you are, I think for a lot of men, that's really challenging. I'm not saying it's, universal. I'm sure there's a lot of mothers who have this challenge as well, but it's quite difficult if you're so used to like walking into a room and saying like da 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 da, which is, if we're being, most societies, that's the male disposition. And now for like 2 years, you've got this little being that can only communicate to you in crying and sometimes in laughter. You're completely powerless. You have to just do what they. And so I think, to me, that's a great humility thing. I didn't mind that. I loved that. And I was very happy with other men seeing me in that space. I
Nice.
think there are a lot of men who cannot handle that. And I don't mean it as a critique, it's just purely an observation of like, they don't
Yeah.
know what to do with that silence. Like, you spend an entire day, with a 1 year-old from 8 in the morning until 5 o'clock, and you have no conversation, and then prolong that over, you know what I mean? So it's like, that's, and all, a lot of mothers have done this without complaints. It's super easily. And all this, and I think a lot of men get confronted by that, which is why a lot of conversations you hear these men who, and these fathers who are like, oh, like when they're older, that's when I can jump in, I can play, I can throw them around and all this stuff. But no one wants to do that upfront bit. So to me, that's the big humility thing, because it really brings you down and suddenly makes you realize like your voice might not be as important as you think.
I think that's well said. And I also think that's what makes it really hard to be a mother. I mean, I
Yeah,
think
totally.
it's hard to care give to be a caregiver of an infant. They're incredibly challenging for those reasons and many other
Yeah.
reasons.
No, absolutely.
So what was challenging for you? What were the hard bits when you were a new dad? And did you do your year and a half straight away from birth, or how did that work?
No, like, yeah, Kat went first. Like, practically, she went first, and then we literally tag team out, and I left my job at the time and took it on. It accumulated into like about a year and a half, because it came quite close to the edge of COVID and all of that. But it started as 3 months and extended to 6 months, then COVID hit, and it just rolled on like that. What was really challenging? Well, I'd say, I guess, two things. I think there is a kind of like, and I think there's like maybe a universal parent thing where you're excited for the birth, and then it happens, and then there's a moment where you realize how long the road actually is. As in, like, you're like week one and you're like, shit, this is like another 20, 30 years of this. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't know how to describe it, but it's something that every new parent I encounter, they all suddenly, it's like a light goes on. They're like, okay, it's not just
Yeah.
for now. So I think that's the one of like, because you have to then learn how to manage energy totally differently. And a lot of your relational structures and social structures kind of die a death. It's like, I'm pretty bad on WhatsApp. Like, I think a lot of friends, like,
I would know nothing about that.
but I'm pretty like, but it's never, I was certainly a lot better before parenthood, but like post-parenthood, it's like, it's for more for people who don't understand. It's like, there are days where you just, there's just so much like surrounding it. There's so much, it's like it's its own job, and people have said this for eons and eons. And so when people don't understand it, like, sometimes people can take it personally. Like, I've had like people who'd be like, oh, it's not that hard to just like call me or whatever. I'm like, I'm really sorry, dude. Like, I'm in it at the moment. There's a lot that I have to pay attention to. It's nothing personal. So I guess there's that, because your social structures really like metamorphosize. And I think it's universal for parents. There are people who you thought were going to be there and they aren't. And that really, it can hurt depending on how deep that connection was. And then you're also pleasantly surprised by some people who keep turning up. And then the other side, which I'd say I always say to friends, is it's not really difficult, but more like observational of like, I always feel for the father is probably the last person who sees what the mother was like before she became a mom. And I've always, in a weird way, I kind of, to the point of like mattress sense. I can never say the title, but to that book, it's like this idea that we now are knowing and like kind of finally having conversations with of like how the mother physically changes, like literally her biology changes, her entire persona and character completely changes. And kiddo never gets to see a version of mum before that. You know, they can see it through photos or existing videos, but it's like, and then it's this odd bittersweet thing where you're like, oh, you came and changed our wonderful lives, but there's this whole other side of mum that, existed before. Whereas like, I think it maybe affects dads a little less because tech, our biology doesn't really have to change. There's a lot of changes we can make consciously ourselves, but nothing's going to effectively, I'm still going to have the same height and all this stuff. Where I might just lose hair, but let's be honest, I had no hair when he was born. So yeah, I'd say those things really were kind of, yeah, more the biggest challenges.
Yeah. I mean, what I'm picking up on what you're saying is that there's loss. I mean, you're gaining this new life and it is a beautiful thing. And there's a part of it that shifts so much that something gets lost. And did you feel like you went through a period of grief or mourning of what was lost, or how did you experience it?
Absolutely. I think, I mean, yeah, it's lost the right feeling I had. I mean, I think I certainly became intensely aware of how infinite my life is, right? It's again going back to the humbling and humility thing. I remember having a distinct experience of I went to watch Everything Everywhere All at Once, like great movie. But there's a lot of nodes that hit on that of like, I think the moment you, the day your child is born, I'd say to myself is like that's the beginning of the end of me, if that makes sense, because that's going to carry on in some other being, but you're kind of now on this runway, and you do see the loss, like it's a loss of energy, you see yourself getting more and more tired, and it's a loss of vitality in some respects and regards, and there's so many things you can't do anymore as freely, and so you've of course you are gaining other things. There are things that you are coming to you that you didn't expect. Like one thing I didn't expect, for example, is like all these incredible new relationships through parenting, new friends through the playground and all this stuff. Yeah, but it was a lot of loss. But I didn't grieve. I was fortunate because I really wanted to have kiddo at that space. I have a lot of empathy, I think, for folks who have kids at the wrong time. Like that must be really difficult to be like, whether it's intentional or not, or like it can really, like I remember I did have a friend who we're the same age, I'm 38 next month, and we started art school in the same week, and she dropped out because she found out she was pregnant in week two, and all she'd wanted to do was go to fashion school. That's all she wanted. In the same breath, now we're all grown up, her daughter is now old enough as well, she's like finishing in teens, and she works in fashion, so and now she's like young and free again. So it's like, which is, you kind of look at that and you're like, which is worse, which is better? You don't really know. So I think, yeah, in that sense, there's always something to gain, always something to lose, and it's a happy, you end up in some medium point, and then it's you figuring out which is the most important.
And in terms of your relationship, like if you had to give someone advice, like a father who's got a pregnant partner and they're just kind of thinking ahead and they want to know what do we have to do? What do we have to think about? What kind of conversation should we be having to prepare our relationship for what's going to come? What would, given your experience, what would you say people need to be thinking about, and what are some of the challenges that occur for a relationship when you have a baby?
I mean, it's, yeah, super interesting point. I thought about it often. I mean, yeah, we, I mean, obviously I'm not married anymore, but when I was in it, I think certainly I did learn, it's like, it's learning to extend as much empathy as possible. And I think just on a practical level is learning to detect when you're what you become when you're tired. And I know that sounds really kind of basic, but I'm an old, like I said, I'm an old boarding school boy, so I can operate in like 0 hours sleep, and I know what it's like to the feeling of not having a single minute of the day to yourself. So whereas like when we were in that period, is it we both went to really different, had different kind of upbringing and experiences with that, with exhaustion and privacy. And so there's a lot of empathy that has to extend. I always think about, you know, when it's like 3 in the morning, you know, kiddo's woken up for the sixth time. One of you has to go to work, the other has to look after the child. I think the really good high value parent is the one who's able to extend empathy in that moment and over and above and be like, cool, I will, because we can. And I think I've argued this ad nauseum many, many times, but I think fathers can, aside from breastfeeding, there's very little else that we can be excluded from in the in the. So yeah, all the conversations around like, yeah, I've got to go to work, and I don't know. It's I think that's what needs to be always addressed. So yeah, I can only think about like empathy, empathy, empathy. The favorite thing I learned, sorry, just a side note, we were given a, I don't know, we were told one of the best gifts we were given when our son was born was friends sent us 2 weeks of pre-cooked meals. But not just pre-cooked. They were like, it's all based on like how, if I understand this correctly, in China, when the mother gives birth, traditionally, I believe it's the mother-in-law comes and lives with her, and for 2 weeks they just shut down the house, and she cooks like nourishing broths and stews to like literally replenish everything, right? Because I think in the West, that's the other thing, is like, you know, the mother, the woman gives birth, becomes a mother, and it's just as soon as she can stand up, it's like out the hospital, there you go, carry on. And it's like she's just run a super marathon, and there's no like, so you're probably carrying that exhaustion the whole way through, and that's why you need the constant empathy of like, I literally need to recover from this. I need to recover and deal with this new position I'm in. And it's like, it's a new job that no one's given me notes on how to do. It's so distinct. And so that's all I can think of is just like empathy, empathy, empathy. Of like, if you were in that position, how would you respond? Treat someone in the way that you'd. Yeah. But it's hard. It's hard. We all carry our
I mean,
expectations.
I think that is really hard. And I think what you're saying, it's like we are in different experiences. And I think this is something I teach in my Oh Baby WTF course, which is that you don't think about it ahead of time, but there's something that really kind of se sort of se separates you and causes a gulf between the two of you, which is that you are experiencing the same thing so differently. And
Twitter.
because your experiences are so different, so just, yeah, it's so hard to relate to, that I think the easier thing is to just sort of stay in your own experience. And I
Yeah.
think if I can add on to what you're saying, I think the onus, because it is happening for the woman in a more visceral way and a more intense way, and I think, the short answer of why is there no matrescence for dads is that the dad, it's an opt-in sort of situation, right? Like
Yeah, totally.
dads could technically cause someone to be pregnant and then nothing would happen to them after that. Whereas there is no way that a woman gets out of this thing without all of these changes happening to her physiologically, hormonally, psychologically, socially, all of it. Like there's no opting in or out for a woman. So I'm going to just extend what you're saying and saying, it is on the man. It's the onus is on the man to extend empathy to the woman because he's going through more. Do you think that's fair?
That's 100%, and I'm a great believer of that. It's like, I mean, even in my experience, like I think I'd like to think I tried my best and did my best, but even then, it's like I'm sure there's things I could have adapted and evolved or whichever. But you're right, the opting in thing is like the very, that's the real, like, I think societal challenge. It's like you kind of like, as an example, I was cracking up because a few weeks ago there was, it was like NPR or something made this Instagram post. I'll send it to you, where they were talking about, I don't know if you heard this phrase, latte pappa, in Sweden and Norway. It's basically what
No.
my Scandinavian colleagues used to call me. Latte pappa is just slang for full-time dad. And it's like all these dads who literally are just doing what mothers do day in, day out. And NPR made this whole thing about like, oh, they're doing this, and it somehow inspired a group of dads in like Brooklyn to do the same, but they meet up like once a week to do it. And someone made a comment in there just saying like, I can't believe this is like the standard of praise for like father, you know what I mean? It's like, but and it just makes me think of like when you're talking about like opting in, it's like we can be at a space where it's like it's yeah, I'll choose to do what I'm supposed to do. It's kind of like, so yeah, you're right. It's like, I think as the father, I think you should treat it as like compulsory and as important as everything else, you know? It's like, because you're right, you're like, you are co-parenting. I think everyone is actually a co-parent, regardless of, you know, relational status or whatever. You're both raising a child together. Therefore, you should be doing all of that stuff together, and those who have more strength, I believe, should carry more. Maybe that's like my inner socialist somehow, but it's like you really should, you
That is such a beautiful point. I once had a
know?
couple who were in couples therapy with me, and the woman turned to the man and said, "Your lung capacity is bigger. Can you not just breathe deeper for the both of us?" And like obviously it was more symbolic about I need more from you, but you are bigger. Be bigger, you know. And my whole sort of game plan, my like long-term goal of all of this is I want us to like almost have some sort of motivational element where we're like hyping up the dad role, because for me, how awesome would it be to depict fatherhood differently so that men are like, that's how I prove I'm the fucking man, you know, like that's like you're bigger, you're stronger, you can do this, you can handle this shit, like look at how you're doing this fatherhood thing, like that would be the ultimate goal for me.
Yeah, totally. And even to that point, like I think the thing that I always hark on is that like men won't, and not to try contradict what I was saying earlier, but it's like in doing that, you're not gonna lose anything. Like you'll still be the man, if not more so a man, you know. If that, even if that is so important to you, of like I need to be, I'm like the man who takes care of quote unquote his business, you know, or like does that. Well, I'm like, you'll still be the man, so you still get the benefits. So
Yeah.
it shouldn't
But
have to
what you
be.
are going to lose if you don't do it is you're going to lose that relationship with your child. And I think I listened to a podcast about like mental load and how difficult it is to like make the invisible labor visible when it's in relationships and whatever. And the one point that I always remember is someone saying, you know, for them, when their parents got divorced, and after that point, they always thought of their mother's home as home. And their father's home is dad's house. And that was because the relationship and the way that dad sort of created the space that it was never home. And do you want that? Because you lose out. You lose out on having that long-term relationship with someone who's going to be incredibly special for the rest of your life, basically, hopefully. And you're missing out on the best thing, which is you do all this hard work up front because it's the best thing ever to have a relationship with this little person who then turns into a big person in front of your eyes, no?
Oh, totally. But
And
I
I
mean,
just
even
believe that and felt that.
absolutely. And I mean, even just to add to that, obviously, like we've been co-parenting now, coming on 4 years this summer. And I'm always astounded but intrigued when I meet people. We do 1 week on, 1 week off. It's like really split down the middle. I'm yet to meet, and I mean this in like a just observational way, not sort of bigging up in any direction, but I'm yet to meet another co-parenting situation that does it in the same way. 100% of the time, mom has kiddo for 10 days, 14 days, like all by themselves. Then dad has them every couple of weeks or something like that. Or dad has them like one evening a week or sort of thing. And so when we like encounter folks, it seems like quite an oddity to people. They're like, oh, that's cool. Didn't even realize that was like possible or whichever. Like, and in my head, I'm like, but no, but you can do it. You know what I mean? And I think you should, if wherever possible, just, but it's still, going back to your conversations around nurturing, I think there's a lot of societal conversations that we need to, I don't know, like mature a little and sort of make folks realize that like there can be a nurturing element to men as well. Like it can be included. There can be soft care as well. And just this
Yes.
belief that like, you know, it's that classic thing of like, oh, dad's house is all the like the sugary drinks and all this, which ironically I've got the snack cupboard. We Killian and I call our space our place the tuck shop, you know. It's but that's with the whole family, you know what I mean? But you can still do that in the same way mums can like play loads of sports with their kids. You know what I mean? It's like it's about rearranging and reorganizing those kind of social settings. So
But I think you've had the will from the beginning, and I don't think everyone does, but I also think that sometimes men might have the will, but there's like barriers to entry.
Yes,
And
yeah.
the barriers to entry are either societal, but sometimes relational. And there's such a thing as maternal gatekeeping, and moms,
Yes, yeah.
also sometimes, struggle to let go and let dad have that role. Like you said, he can do
Yeah.
everything other than breastfeeding, but our mom's actually letting him do everything other than breastfeeding. So I
Yeah,
guess what I
totally.
wanted to ask you was, we spoke about dads extending empathy to mom's experience and that being like a really critical element. But
Yeah.
if moms were to sort of take from this conversation, because I think I have a lot of female listeners, like if moms were to take from this conversation, like what would you suggest be like the one thing that moms could do to extend empathy to the dads in their lives to enable this kind of fatherhood expression, this version of fatherhood that you symbolize? How can moms think about dads differently? What do moms need to know about what it is for fathers that is maybe some of the barriers, and how we can support that better? Bringing a baby home isn't just about nappies and night feeds. It changes everything: your identity, your relationships, even your career. If you're expecting a baby or recently became a parent, my online course, Oh Baby, WTF, is for you. It's not your typical antenatal class. It goes deeper into the real, often messy experience of becoming a parent. You'll explore the four big spheres that shift when a baby arrives: who you are, your partnership, your community, and your work life. And you'll walk away with a practical mental health toolkit to help you through those "what just happened" moments. All online, self-paced, honest, real, and actually helpful. Ready to feel more prepared for everything that comes with a new baby? Head to onthecouchwithcarly.com to find out more and sign up for Oh Baby WTF today.
Yeah, absolutely. Watch this is the part where Cohen cancels himself. No, it's very, it's, yeah, we talk about this so much because you're right. There's a massive element of like familial hangovers. It's a prime example. There's the old adage of like the half turkey in the oven. Like couple gets married and they have an argument over how to roast a turkey. And the wife is like, well, you got to cut it in half and put it in the oven. He's like, you got to put it in whole. And she's so adamant about this, she has to call her mom and be like, why do we roast it in half? And she's like, oh, I've got to call my grandmother. And then grandmother says, the only reason we roast it half is because we had a small oven. So you kind of have this thing of like sometimes we carry like how we've been obviously raised into our relationship. And something that we talk a lot about is separating the relationships. And this is like, I guess, also important for like co-parents. It's like your romantic connection, if you have one. Your romantic connection has nothing to do with the child, so to speak. That's like you two. The child is a byproduct of that, but they should not kind of get involved in the consequences of that. And why I reference that is that oftentimes when you get into a lot of the time, maybe in a more cliche sense, you can get when you're talking about maternal gatekeeping, it tends to be issues of trust. Well, he won't do it in the way that I will. I know I can do it right, but he's not going to do it in the way that I think he should, therefore I won't even let him. You know, so that's where you get scenarios where it's like you hear crazy stories of like the mom who's never left her kids for like 5 years or something crazy, and there's this guy who's like next to the whole time. And it's like you look at that and you're like, okay, but where does that come from? Is that really because you couldn't do it or because you just don't trust that bro is gonna cook for them or da 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 this? So there's something clearly overhung there, likely to have come from the romantic connection, perhaps there's things they've done in the past, or maybe they've proven themselves to be untrustworthy or whichever, which is a whole separate conversation. But all of that to say is that I think the most important thing is like we have to turn up every day and give the other partner the benefit of the doubt that they will do a good enough job, you know? And also to just like I'm like the cat's really brilliant at this of just like just leave them to it to figure out because the mother's also had to figure it out. You know what I mean? It's like Don't ask me what's in the nursery WhatsApp group or school WhatsApp. Go find out yourself. We're both there. We're both present. I don't know when I became a default secretary or PA. You know, it's like, so you kind of have to, and as a good friend of mine says, like, sometimes you just have to like let the ship burn for people to learn, you know? So it's like, just let them just be of like,
But this is what I speak about. I speak about time on the pitch, and I think that what happens is that when moms are so, I think the newborn phase is so intensely, there is just a biological thing where mom has just more time on the pitch, because if, particularly if she's breastfeeding, that is a sort of body to body contact every 2 hours, 24 hours a day for, let's call it, 3 months. That is just more time on the pitch. Dad could do all of the nappies and all of the bum wiping and all of the burping and all of the changing, and he still probably wouldn't be spending as much time with the baby, because the baby sleeps also half the time. So yeah, I think what happens is that it kind of causes like a default sort of setup where mom's just got had more time on the pitch, therefore she's more experienced, because she was also once a complete novice.
Yeah, totally, totally.
And I think so I like this idea of just like extending this idea of, it's like taking someone who's never driven before for a ride in your car. Like, it's terrifying, and there's a big part of you that doesn't feel like you trust them to drive properly, but they're never going to learn unless you sit beside them and you kind of help them to figure it out. And hopefully you don't have to give as many clear instructions, because that is also mental load. But I think what you're saying is really important. And also just that, like, that empathy of like, he's learning, not he's an idiot, and I think this might be a generalization, but I think men are particularly sensitive to people thinking they're idiots. I mean, fragile ego alert.
Yeah, totally.
So when I sit in my body thinking you're an idiot, that actually kind of turns you off from the whole experience. You're not going to go and rush into a thing that I've already decided you're an idiot at.
100%. And I think you're right, even to that end. I'm always like endlessly amazed at how this, I don't know how to explain, but almost like how, not how little is expected, but like the in the same way as like so little is expected of fathers. And by that I just mean like people don't often just have a thing of like they can do the basics. I'm also astounded at how much is expected of mothers in terms of like, oh, they can do everything. And it's like that's not true. You know, it's also like I always talk the parenting thing, there's like I think a lot of people want to have a baby, but very few people want to have a child. To me, those are two very different strata. And it's like I think some people can be incredible in the like baby to toddler stage. And it's like when they become a child and then a teenager, that's a whole different set of skills, right? So then you start getting into the conversations of like, because even if like it's easy when it's like tasks that are like quite didactic and really can be learned quickly. It's like changing nappies, feeding a child, bathing, da da da. That's not that heavy a lift. What happens with like, well, who starts to help with homework? Who is teaching the child how to play sport? Who teaches the child how to ride a bike? Because and suddenly all of those things, like there's parents who like their dad never taught them how to ride a bike, so they're like petrified of it. So then you know what I mean? Like who should be doing that? Like in my family, we all read, but I'm the biggest reader, so it's like, you know, does that by default mean like I'm now in charge of our child's literacy? Do you know what I mean? It's like there's all of this stuff where it's like you need to have conversations around that when it gets really nuanced and, you
Do you
know.
like the idea of portfolios? Like, do you think it works well, where like you have a discussion ahead of time and each parent knows, like, this is my portfolio, this is what I do, and I do it on my own. I don't need input from the other parent, and I get left to my own devices for the most part. I can, like, it's not like I can't take feedback, but I do you feel like that's quite important to split things up like that, or?
I mean, maybe to a degree, it's probably a blend. I'm a big fan of accountability in the sense of like, we do it, but you're part of the conversation. Like, I get very funny about, maybe that's showing my sort of sensitivities growing up. I grew up in around a lot of families where like, basically mum was like VP and dad was the exec. So there's still like one kind of voice that says, well, we're doing it this way. And it's, I'd love to avoid that. I don't think where we're going as society, we need that. I don't think we ever needed it, to be fair. But, and so when you get into that space where it's like, well, I'm going to do X, you're going to do Y, I think in principle it can work, but I still think there needs to be like a conversation to know why you've done that, and the understanding that it's coming from the best interests of the familial unit, as opposed to like it's just easiest for me
No, I
or
think that that's a good point.
yeah.
So we don't have too much time left. We have a few
Sorry,
minutes. I wanted to
so.
ask you the final question, which is, given your work, I mean, in a very small nutshell, how do you feel that art can be used to shift the conversation around fatherhood? And how have you in your work depicted fatherhood in a way that you think does that?
I mean, geez, beautifully, beautifully. There's so many incredible films about parenthood and fatherhood in particular. I think the two that always come to mind, actually three films really quickly that I always think about with parenthood. You're gonna laugh at this. The first is Forrest Gump in a beautiful way. Like I mean, I've always loved that film, but I love how Forrest sort of, in a way, he kind of symbolizes like the male in its rawest form when it doesn't fully understand itself, and then he suddenly becomes a father, and then suddenly becomes a single father, and he's just doing his best. I think that was like a really beautiful rendering of like it's possible, like your attempt at the best is possible. The second one is a beautiful Italian film from 1994 called Life is Beautiful, and that's I've done that on occasion. But for those who don't know the film, it's a story about this Italian family who, when World War II breaks out, they basically go on the run, and the father turns everything into a game to protect his son from the horrors of creeping Nazism. And it's awful, like the final scene and everything, always but I've done that on occasion with Killian, where it's like, we can see like a bike being stolen or something in the background, or some really heinous act, someone's shouting in the background. And I'm like, okay, everyone close your eyes now. Let's count to three to imagine. You sort of have to like distract and act in real time. I think it's just a beautiful expression of like the reality of like having to like move and pivot and shift re things really quick. And to that point, very quickly, the last one is a film by Spike Jonze called Come On, Come On, which is probably the most realistic on-screen rendering of modern parenting. And that is literally a story about Joaquin Phoenix. He plays this radio journo who has to look after his nephew because the parents are unwell. And it's like, for well-meaning to do parents who have tried their best and life still doesn't work out, is amazing. So I think it's got this beautiful power to make people empathize and understand that it's not as simple and straightforward. Because I think there's a lot of films that made family life look very easy. And made anyone who wasn't in those traditional structures feel bad for not achieving that, So I think it's got the power to like show different mirrors and show different faces. In my context, I sort of just amongst, as he says, famously amongst friends, I was when, and I'm sure she wouldn't mind me saying this, but I know Kat had really bad postpartum. And when she was going through it, I really found it fascinating to watch, but I'd wanted some expression of that for people to understand, because to my earlier comment, I don't think people postpartum is just this massive box we just never probe, at least in the West, because you're given a child and the mother's expected to be happy, and no one talks about the sliding depression and all of that stuff. So I'd made a short film which I think like maybe seven people have seen. We haven't released it. I wouldn't ever release it without her sort of final approval, but I basically got her to send me voice notes to explain it to me. And it's a 3-minute film, but she sent me 45 minutes of voice notes so I could make something really like, but she just explained it so unbelievably eloquently. And the thing that was beautiful for me was like she was in it. It wasn't a sort of like retroactive 5 years later, now I've got distance. She was like in it. She was literally in bed with even the audio sounds a bit like you can hear the tiredness in her voice. And I'm not kind of, I don't want to promote sort of like exhaustion type cinema in a way, but I just thought it's because you never see that. You never hear that. No one shows us the films of like the mom who's exhausted and her hair she hasn't been able to go to like get her hair done in so long, and she can't even find her lipstick or lip balm. Like all of that stuff is always like quite hidden away. And we're told, I think a lot of women are told to not show that, always have to be your best. You've got to be. And also for your kids to not see that mummy's tired or mummy's exhausted. It's like you. And so I think that's the power we can take from like making new stories that address that, of like, mummy does get tired, mummy does get snappy, mummy swears, And so can dad. And all of this shows that they're two human beings just like you who are trying to figure out this complicated world. They can just do it a little safer than you, but on the whole, I don't know if that made sense.
That does make sense. I would say if I had to sort of take two things, I would say it's empathy for mum and dads need to show up. And that's pretty much that's pretty much it.
Exactly.
If we didn't have a mention of Forrest Gump, I would have been disappointed. So thank you for sliding that
Real shoehorn in there. It's like the Forrest Gump is
Oh, my dear friend, it is so nice to see you. I have to end. I've got another meeting, but yeah.
Perfect.
So much
Thanks,
for
Carly.
fun.
Thanks for having me on. But yeah, and yeah, let's chat soon.
Let's do it again.
I'll send you a WhatsApp. It'll be great. Chat in like 4 weeks. Take care, friend. I'll see you later.
Cheers.
Cheers, bye.
Bye. Thank you so much for listening to On the Couch with Carly. If something in this episode resonated with you or made you feel less alone, that means the world to me. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and now in video format on YouTube. For exclusive content and resources, visit our website at onthecouchwithcarly.com. If you enjoyed today's conversation, please consider leaving a rating or review. It really does help others discover our safe space for authentic conversation. Until next time, please take good care of yourself. I can't wait to be back on the couch with you again.